All right, we are on tape at the moment. And I don't know if anyone else has access to the agenda or not. I've got it via my phone. We will start our, what month are we? May.
Is there an agenda? I mean, a paper one?
No.
Oh, okay.
Unless you know how to print off of this to everyone here. We're improvising tonight. This is the May meeting of the public, the Westland Public Safety Advisory Board. We are meeting at the Tualatin Valley Fire Station in the Willamette area since we could not get access to the community room at the police station. So we are commencing this at, I think it's about 6:11 p.m. I have the agenda on my phone. Did anyone get a chance to look at it?
Yeah.
Were there any changes or modifications to the agenda that we needed to make? It's pretty much the same agenda we've been using for the last year.
Right. I don't know where, Will, I just wanted to hear about follow-up from our last meeting. Would that be under old business?
Probably.
Okay.
Or, if nothing else, under sort of the good of the order at the end, but we can get that at some point with no problem. If there are no other changes to the agenda.
I don't see good of the order.
We have sort of community comments and updates. I mean, that's sort of the catch-all.
Well,
more than likely it'll fall under the old business when we get to that, but.
Okay, I'll put that there.
Okay. I mean, it's only printed on paper. It's not like it's etched in stone. Any other changes or modifications? And if none, we move to accept the agenda.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Cover that base. We don't have a written copy of the minutes. I believe a...
Can we do introductions?
Okay. Very good. I don't have that written on here. I probably should put that on there. Introductions as to who is here tonight. I'm Tom Friedland. I'm the chair of the board. To my left is...
Judy Wickman, board member.
Jeff Enninger, Clackamas Community College, as a guest.
Stephen Myers, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue.
Amy Smith, board member.
Carolyn Jones, visitor from Lake Oswego.
Chris Duncan, member of the board, inscribing.
Michael McGrath, board member.
And we're back to me. Okay. Did anyone get a chance to look at the minutes that came out as sort of a hard copy from Tony and or listen to the audio?
I scanned the minutes.
Okay.
I didn't listen.
Okay. It's kind of hard to listen to the printed paper. Were there any changes on those that anyone had? And if not, does somebody wish to entertain a motion to approve what we had received via email earlier?
I move to approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
All up in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Well, one more down. On the agenda, we move to old business. Was there something, Chris, that you needed to bring up from the last meeting?
Well, I just wondered, one of the things that you were going to possibly talk about, we've talked about sort of some kind of collaboration or protocol with the Transportation Advisory Board.
Okay.
To just begin to sort out when things, particularly traffic issues, are more advisable to be taken up there as opposed to public safety, with the intent of not ping-ponging people with concerns, sort of back and forth, oh, you should talk to them, or you should talk to this. Where's the weight? And I thought we were going to try to pursue some dialogue that way.
I don't remember precisely. Did somebody volunteer to contact?
You were going to talk.
I was going to talk to the Youth Advisory Council, which I didn't do.
That was regarding.
I know, but I mean, I don't remember committing to the traffic, but then again, I haven't gotten anything done these last couple of weeks, but there are other reasons for that. So no, nothing's been done on that.
Okay.
And I will make an effort to check into it here since we have 5 weeks to work with till our next meeting. gives us a little extra chance. And yes, it's a good point. And if you'd be really, really helpful and send me a reminder email when you get home, that would help as well.
I will, because I mean, we don't know what's on there. Those are plates, and maybe it's not.
I have to get to,
but I just think that.
This week is going to be as ugly as my last several, so I may not get to anything till next week. So, but we'll try and follow up on that. Do we have anything new, anything more recent to discuss regarding disaster preparedness?
Yes. Chris and I have gone back and forth just trying to rack our brains about how we can get the giant map of the city of all the homes that have had the training, well, the Map Your Neighborhood training, onto the city website so that people can do it would be a read-only document, of course.
A visual idea of how much has been done or what areas haven't been addressed.
So what I did was I spoke with Megan over, she's one of the GIS engineers at the city that I've worked with before, and asked if this was something she would be willing to work on, and she said, yes, but do you have any idea how many homes there already are and how long it would take me to do them? And I said, well, since I kind of know computer software, I said, I seriously doubt with your sophisticated software it would take you longer than, like, you know, 15 seconds per click to get these entered, and then once it's done, all you have to do is add to it, and that would really be a very small matter per quarter. She said, oh, it's not like a daily thing. I said, no, not at all. So maybe once a quarter you'd have to spend 10 minutes updating. The question that we both suddenly realized at the same time was, do we need, well, first of all, if the public can look at it and access it, that's one thing. If only the IS people and GIS people can, or the IT people over at the city can look at it, that's something else, because they have documents that they've signed and they are sworn to do certain things. And do we have an issue with privacy? If you're seeing a map and you can see, you know, 3412 Southeast Sharon Lane in West Lynn, and that they've had training. And I know this is carrying it far, but this is based on what some sheriffs.
No, I'm not questioning it at all. It's a very valid point.
It
is a very valid point.
Because if somebody goes and looks at that, and they can go, oh, well, I'm short on food right now, and these houses have had the training, they probably staff, and I don't know how analytical this gets, but they probably stocked up on things, and I know exactly where they are. That's the far-flung one.
That
highly unlikely, but we have to protect people's privacy, and we didn't really know how to go about this, and I was hoping that our liaison from the council would be here tonight and we could address it to her. So I thought I would just go ahead and ask Jules this question.
I think it's a very valid point, and I think it requires probably a little bit more research than just a simple discussion.
Yeah.
And that I think perhaps maybe we need to route that to someone within city legal status to try and determine whether that's something that can be shared openly or not. I don't know.
I thought the appropriate thing would be to mention it here, knowing that there's absolutely no quick answer to this, and then talk to Jules, and I'd be willing to go to City Hall and talk to her or whatever. Do you expect her to come to the meetings regularly, or...?
I think if we provided her with, if we were to do this or move forward with it, I think we'd be able to just provide her with the information to update that.
And then
that.
Maybe she can run it past legal, because it's, I'm a very private person. We have to respect the privacy of the citizens, but this is a valuable tool, so it's a delicate dance.
And I think what we might need to do is draft out exactly what it is we are hoping to do with it.
Right.
So that it can be presented as a review by counsel, legal counsel. The only other thing, which is a completely different aspect of the same idea, not that the privacy of it, but if you're doing it on a citywide map that's visible on a computer screen or even, you know, like on a phone, it might be overwhelming as far as not being able to see where it is. It might be nice if it could be reduced to, say, like neighborhood association or some other step to make it into a manageable size You know, maybe they can see the overview, but maybe if they can click into the smaller geographic subdivision might be something to look into.
I've clicked on those. I've gone into the mapping, and I've pulled up just my little part of Robinwood. Mm-hmm. It's really easy.
Okay.
I just looked at it as, it's very intuitive. I don't have huge computer skills, but I came out of the computer industry. It's a very logical way of accessing information.
Yeah. If we get over the hurdle on the legal end, I think it'd be nice if we were able to at least allow it to be viewed in that fashion. But that's just my suggestion.
I just think it's something we need to do. I mean, as opposed to me having a board with this little piece of plastic that has all the felt tip marker and then flip it, and, you know, it's like it's a little kludgy and a little grade school-y.
Yeah, we're moving beyond that in these
21st
days.
Century. Yay.
Any other map your neighborhood or disaster preparedness stuff?
No, we have two team leaders in two different sections of the city. They're still trying to get dates and people together, and they keep saying, oh, I'm so sorry, I just can't seem to get this. But I am going to be speaking to the Rosemont group in a few weeks, their neighborhood meeting.
Okay.
And hopefully get some people who will volunteer to open their homes up for this. Once I explain what it is and that we do all the work and all they have to do is open their home and put chairs out, it gets a little more simple.
Okay.
So that's it.
Anyone else have anything under disaster preparedness or semi-related?
I just have a question about the training. This is one of my second meetings, so I'm really still learning about what you guys have already are done. So you're talking about how do I figure out like what neighborhoods have and have not had this training?
This is the map that we have that we're trying to get online. I physically have it in my house. Which, you know, probably isn't the safest thing in the world, and we have no backup for it. It's the original map. It's this big, and I mark off with see-through orange felt-tip marker all the houses that have had this training, and my predecessor did the same thing. So you can look at a glance and go, everywhere there's orange, that's the ones that have had it.
Okay.
What I should probably do is bring it for you and Michael next meeting and just show you so you can see it.
And bear in mind, it took me the better part of my first year to even understand what Map Your Neighborhood was.
It's pretty straightforward.
It is, but you.
And he's
it took,
smart.
It took a while to figure out it was a disaster preparedness when it's like Map Your Neighborhood.
You know, I'd be happy to get together offline with you sometime, or maybe, you know, stay for a few minutes after the next meeting, show you the materials, and give you a sort of a 15-minute crash course of what we do.
That would be good.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just to talk about the last meeting, you were talking about you wanted to look at Nextdoor and the different social media apps in terms of like disseminating information for emergency preparedness. And I did get on Nextdoor, and I'm still, you know, working my way through it. And I had suggested possibly putting together like a short, some demonstration videos for people how to prepare.
Yes.
Okay. And I think that, and I want to talk to Jules too, because I really think that it would be important. To also share this information on a city's Facebook page. So perhaps if we put together these videos, the city could share it on our behalf.
Great.
So we don't have to have our own Facebook page.
That would be
great.
But I
think you're going to reach a lot of people, and there's so many little things that you can do, and I'm sure, you know, you guys have a lot of training and that stuff, and I used to be a cop as well, so I've got a little bit of background, but if we could put together like maybe a short video series, like I'm talking like 2-3 minutes, something, because people just want it quick.
Sure.
They don't want to spend a whole lot of time on
it.
How to purify water and save it. You know, other cooking options if you don't have electrical. All those things. I'm a backpacker too, so I have all these fun gadgets that are around the house that you could really purchase and use if you don't ever intend on camping. So I think that would be something that
with the help
of my 13-year-old who's really good at like the video editing.
Okay.
I mean, seriously, like she could really help me.
That is great.
Outstanding.
No, really, and there's no sense in, you know, doubling up on our efforts if we could go to the city's Facebook page.
I just think it's a logical, you're going to have the citizens on there already, and the more social media outlets you can use, because I mean, I'm on Nextdoor, but I don't know, and I look to see my neighborhood, who also was registered, but that doesn't mean that they're reading the alerts and going on and checking things. I mean, Facebook kind of seems like the number one.
Yeah.
Way to go.
And I think it's important that we get our email address out there, westlinready@gmail.com.
Okay.
And just keep pounding away at that. And I was even thinking of doing little half sheets with that information and just bold letters, are you prepared, and that, and hand it out at Market of Choice. I mean, you know, the Girl Scouts sell cookies. I could sell preparedness.
Okay, well, perhaps I could put together maybe like a rough video with my kid
then
present it to you guys and see what you think.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Just a rough idea.
Yeah, and you and I can talk about it because the points that are always asked at these meetings are probably the ones to focus on. I mean, I'm sure you already know them, but the ones that people find puzzling that you wouldn't because of your background, maybe that's what we should address, is they're always concerned about the water. And
mm-hmm.
they always go, well, how do I prepare the food? And how, these cans get old, and we say, get the freeze-dried pouches that have 30-year shelf life. Things like that, and the toilet thing that everybody wants to ask but everybody doesn't want to bring up. So just a few of those bulleted items
sure.
that always come up after a Map Your Neighborhood meeting. They're just still puzzled about certain things.
Okay. And I think the cost factor with some of the stuff, too, Costco sells the kits.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You really don't have to spend.
Yeah.
You don't have to spend a lot of money to be prepared.
And you don't have to go out on one trip and spend $500 doing it.
No,
we recommend you add a little bit every month
yeah, kind of
as you can afford it. Yeah.
I agree.
Okay.
Thank you, Amy.
Sure.
Sorry.
That's okay. Sure.
Have you guys connected with the county on this, the disaster management?
Yes,
okay.
I work with Jamie Poole
yeah.
over at Clackamas
sure.
County.
They have a lot of that on the website
yeah.
already.
And that's what we
yeah.
take to the neighborhood meetings
cool.
to the, you know, to distribute. Oh, yeah, she's
yeah.
armed and
cool.
But we don't think of everything, so thank you for thinking for this.
Yes.
I have nothing to give you on an update on teen driver safety at the moment. I do want to get some input as to our most recent attendees and just get us geared up for the fall group, but this last month has not been one I can get anything done, so we'll work forward on that. Any other old business that is hanging from low branches or anything that we need to address? If that's the case, then our presenter tonight is going to be talking about the incident command system and how different types of entities, whether they be police, fire, public, or private, utilize similar structures in responding to critical incidents. And the hope is that we will get a better idea of the thought process and what goes into planning for managing an unexpected incident. So, Jeff, if you could give a
sure.
introduction about yourself, since all I have is that you're from Clackamas County or Clackamas Community College.
Sure. Well, hi everyone. It's nice to be here. So, cop, I'm free to use that word.
I'll let it go this time.
Okay. And judging by the slight accent, I'm guessing Michigan.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I grew up in Minnesota, so
no.
I can delineate Minnesota, Wisconsin,
okay,
and Michigan.
Well, your accent's
I beat my out of myself, so I think we're good. All right. Well, like I said, it's nice to be here. So my background in this stuff started in the mid 90s up in Alaska. So I worked on a volunteer department and took this crazy wildland firefighting class, and I've really never looked back. So this will be my 26th fire season, I think, something along those lines. So in Alaska, I worked a lot with the fire agencies, but I also worked as an emergency manager for the state. I was one of two planners, so I was more of a rural-focused guy, so I did a lot of rural planning. And a couple buzzwords I want to throw at you early here is sophistication and complexity, right? So if you think about Alaska, it's very complex logistics.
I spent all of my adult working life up there.
Nice. So everything's very complex up there. Either has to be flown in, driven in, or brought in by snowmobile or sled dog, right? So very complex. But a lot of the communities are very low in sophistication, right? So they don't have Walmart in every corner, and it's very rural and very remote. So I'll tie that in later. So that's my Alaska career. I moved to Oregon with my family about 5 years ago and worked for the Department of Forestry full-time for 2 years until I took the job at the college. And I still work for the Department of Forestry in the summer as a firefighter, so we're on contract at the college until mid-June, and then I take off and do fire stuff. and currently on an incident management team, which I'll talk about a little bit here as well. So just to ground us a little bit in my experience, anything that requires a response is what we call an incident. So a barking dog is an incident, right? Is it an emergency? Maybe, maybe not, right? But everything we do is revolving around what we call an incident, which is anything that requires a response. And that response is typically from some type of government agency, okay? So nationally, post 9/11, a lot of things hinged on that timestamp. FEMA was not a response agency. They were a coordination agency, and they provided guidance and support to communities. And post 9/11, so that was pre 9/11, post 9/11, they've gotten a lot more what we call operational. So out of 9/11, they really solidified what they call NIMS. So starting in, hopefully this isn't too busy here, but I wanted a nice graphic to kind of have something to refer to. So NIMS is the National Incident Management System. And like it says, it provides a common framework, a common approach, nationwide approach to the whole community, which is starting with groups like this, right? Informing the community on how to respond and how to deal with a disaster or an emergency, all the way to how to better prepare law enforcement, our medical services, including the hospitals, and of course our fire agencies in responding to these threats and hazards. So NIMS applies to all incidents, regardless of cause, size, location, or complexity. So through federal mandates, and I would argue West Lynn is probably under federal mandate, anybody that takes federal dollars has to comply with NIMS. And I don't know of a community in the country that doesn't take federal dollars anymore. So we have to follow this NIMS process. So what does that look like? Well, ICS, which is on the other side of the graphic here, is part of NIMS. So also within NIMS is a qualification system. Things like public information and how information is managed during events, such as an incident or an emergency. And ICS is just one part of NIMS. So if we look at this response diagram just under NIMS there, I'm gonna focus on that because that's where ICS applies the best. It can be used for other things, like they use ICS for the Super Bowl, to manage the Super Bowl. They use ICS in Washington State to manage the opioid crisis. Actually have an incident management team within King County, and they're using this format to manage a response to opioid crisis across the county. So I'm going to focus on response. As it relates to the emergency management cycle is the rest of this diagram here, where from response we go into recovery, and then pre-disaster we get into mitigating threats and hazards, things like damming and diking rivers, before the flood, lifting houses out of the floodplain. FEMA's even in the practice of buying out properties, removing the home, and just, you know, repatriating.
Relocating,
thank you, to other locations. And then preparedness, which is what you guys, sounds like you're in the middle of doing, which is educating the community, prevention, training, equipping, getting the right equipment in the right place at the right time, and so on. There's a whole acronym for that. Planning, organization, all that stuff. So I'm going to focus a little bit on response because that's really what ICS was developed for. If you follow the line to the bottom of the chart there, that is what a typical response looks like to an incident. So the analogy I always use when I teach ICS is a cop pulls somebody over for speeding. Go up to the car, license and registration, please. They get the license, go back to the car, run the license. Find out that the driver has a felony warrant. So that elevates the threat and the hazard, right, and the risk to that patrol officer. Officer calls for backup, right, at that point with a felony warrant, and goes up to the car to try and get the individual out of the car to make an arrest, and now the individual has a loaded weapon. So that's going to require an additional response. Hopefully the officer backs off, calls for additional help, and now more stuff's coming. Right, they're probably going to put ambulance on standby potentially. They may call SWAT. They may do a bunch of different things. So They don't make an arrest, but the individual gets out of the car, makes a run for it, 2 blocks from the Westland High School on Monday, May 20th. Now we've got what? We got lockdown, right? Now we've got my favorite term of all kind, manhunt. We got an armed suspect running, and we've got a manhunt. So we've gone from a very small incident to now what we call a rapidly emerging incident, where we've gone from maybe an hour or less event to maybe a multi-day event if we can't find the individual. So most of our responses to these types of things are over in 4 hours or less. And we do that every day. 90% of all incidents across the country, probably around the world, are over in less than 4 hours. And they only require an incident commander and maybe one or two other individuals. So if you look at the picture here at the bottom left, I talked about complexity and sophistication a little bit. So a single vehicle accident, minimal injury, is what we call a type 5 incident. It's going to require a fire truck, an ambulance, maybe a patrol officer to do an investigation. It's over in 4 hours, the tow truck shows up, gets the car out of the ditch, and we're done. Very, very low complexity, very low in sophistication of the needed response. Whereas you look at the building in the upper left, now we've got a very large scale disaster, and I forget what building that is.
Oklahoma,
but
isn't it?
Is that the Edward R. Murrow building? I believe it is.
Yeah. Looks like it.
So much more sophisticated, right? We've got a daycare in the first floor. We've got multiple federal agents dead and injured. We've got a whole city block now that's been destroyed. And the sophistication is really high because it's very sensitive. It's very complex. And then we've got what we call a multi-casualty incident. And now that incident's going to expand, right? It's going to go from an incident commander and a couple of fire trucks to probably 600 people managing that event over the course of 10 days to 2 weeks to 3 months. And I believe this response, they had that whole area in downtown OKC locked down for over a year doing the investigation and the recovery, right? That recovery piece. So ICS is pretty unique in these types of responses. Regardless of the complexity and the sophistication of where it's located, ICS can adapt to that. So if we move over to the upper right here, we've got ICS, and these are the key features. So all across the country, Canada, I've been to Canada twice on incidents, on fires, we're all using the common terminology. So an incident commander is an incident commander, and we have all these other terms that we use. It's really a whole new language, to be honest. ICS is its own language. It's got a glossary of a couple hundred words in it that are outside the normal, probably, vocabulary of most Americans. It's very modular, so it can expand and contract. If we don't need things like finance to track costs of an incident, we don't staff it. We don't need things like a public information officer because there's not enough media interest, we don't staff it. However, most of our incidents that we respond with the whole team, which you're seeing at the bottom here, you're going to staff at least every position, sometimes two or three, depending on the size, the complexity, the number of responders, the area of impact, and so on. So it's very modular. We manage things by objectives, so we set priorities. We use 3 priorities common to every response, whether it's the cop and single vehicle accident to large-scale 500,000-acre wildfires. We manage by objectives based on life safety of the public and ourselves. Incident stabilization, so putting the fire out or taking care of the bad guy or whatever it is. And then property and environmental conservation. Those are our 3 priorities in that order. And we base all of our objectives on that. So we'll have an objective that says, keep firefighters and the public safe through proper risk management processes.
So,
and so
life safety,
incident stabilization, and property and environmental conservation. So those are our
getting a call. Getting a call.
Oh.
They're responding to an incident, right? All right. So
it sounded so calm.
It's kind of a soothing sound. So we manage all these incidents by objectives, whether they're written down or not. They're verbally said when this call goes out, when they respond and arrive on incident, they'll have some objectives. Somebody go check the eaves for smoke, right, if it's a fire call, or somebody do a patient assessment if it's a patient that's injured or so on. We also have incident action planning. So we do a 24-hour planning cycle. And on large wildfires or large-scale flooding or those types of events, we'll actually do a full 24-hour planning cycle. Smaller events don't require the same kind of planning. We manage by span of control. So three to seven is how many people effectively one person can manage. Most of us are old enough to remember you only had to remember seven phone digits, right? I can still remember my best friend's phone number from high school, 235-5142, right?
Wow.
We're really good with seven. For some reason, our brains adapt well to seven numbers. So it only makes sense that we can only manage seven people effectively. Ideally, we want to keep that around five people or less to manage. We also have terminology for facilities and locations like incident command posts and base camps and so on. We have a comprehensive resource management system where everyone is credentialed. So on the Tualatin Valley Fire Department, they have to have certain qualifications to get certified in both structure. Doesn't matter what it is, we have a certification process. Most part, that's left to the states to come up with their own certification process. But FEMA also has a comprehensive resource management credentialing process that they follow. Integrated communications, it's mandated that if you're on an incident with other responders, that you have the ability to communicate. And we work really hard to make that happen. It doesn't always work to 100% effectiveness, but we work hard to make sure that we can communicate. That was one of the problems that they had with 9/11. The Port Authority had different communications than FDNY that had different communications than all the other responding agencies. So they've worked really hard, I know, to clean that up. In fact, a fire we were on last summer, there was a fire department and New York Fire Department person there, and I asked him about that. And he said, oh, no, we cleaned that all up.
Now that was, what was that? We had the presentation on it.
First.
Oh, yeah, AT&T.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a little more centered on access and priority for communications, which does complement what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But he's talking more that, you know, it's not like police is talking over here and has their discussion and fire's over here having their discussion and a medical branch is over here having a discussion. Everybody's talking on the same channels, or at least there's a level of coordination between all levels.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, we're integrated. Mm-hmm. All right, then we also have a formal transfer command process. So as things get more complex and as time goes by, people need to be relieved. So we have a process for transferring command from one incident commander and potentially one incident management team to another. We also have this thing called unified command. So if you could picture an active shooter event at the college, law enforcement would unify command with fire, and they would have one voice acting on behalf of their what I call their flavor of response, but there would be one voice, and they would be joined essentially at the hip, not physically, but metaphorically. So we do have a unified command process. We also have a chain of command, meaning no matter what agency you work for, if you're working in operations, you will follow the consistent chain of command. You don't follow what your chief says. You follow what your supervisor out on the fire or out on the incident says. There's also an accountability piece to that of our personnel to make sure that we can track everyone and account for their well-being and welfare and make sure they're food, fed and watered and sanitation. We also have a integrated dispatch deployment system, and that's usually done at the state and local level. And then we also have one important key feature, which is information and intelligence management, so that we're all working on a unified front to accomplish our objectives that are set forth by the incident commander and by the agencies having jurisdiction. So those are some of the key features, and I guess I'll end this before questions with what you're seeing on the bottom right here is what a typical response to a large-scale, very complex incident would look like. So that active shooter event, the wildland fire that gets 1,000 acres where it's threatening homes, we staff all of these positions. Up at the top, you've got the incident commander and then what we call the command staff. And again, those folks are credentialed to work in that position. Liaisons do what it says. They liaise between agencies, between other jurisdictions, and people affected within and externally and internally within the organization. Stefan can speak to the PIO piece, but almost every incident we have at least one or two PIOs anymore because of the social media presence. Even in rural America, there's a Facebook page going up about the fire, guaranteed. And of course, we have our safety officer there. Almost everybody's a safety officer, we say, but we actually designate safety officers to assist us with our planning. And then below that, we have our general staff, operations, planning, logistics, and finance. I serve as a plant section chief currently for the Oregon State Fire Marshal's team as a deputy. Prior to that, I was with the Department of Forestry as one of their plant sections chiefs. And I supervise that staff. We also have logistics, which is everything from food and water, sanitation, medicine, radio communications, supply, facilities management, and then finance handles all of our timekeeping and costs and procurement and contracting and so on. And that all that stuff is there to support one thing, and that is the operation. So there's a whole lot of people to support operations. I've been on incidents as large as 1.7 million acres, where we had 1,000 responders responding to it. I've been on fires half that size that had 5,000 responders on it.
Were you there for Miller's Reach?
I was near Miller's Reach, but I wasn't actually on it.
Okay.
I was on a different incident at the time.
But, oh, really?
Yeah. That was a huge impact, yep. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. We teach whole classes on ICS, many of which are online for free. So I put a link there, and I did forward this to you, I think. There's nobody else on that line. But that link right there takes you to over 100 online free courses, everything from radiation safety to how to plan for disasters at schools to some of the stuff you're talking about, which is home preparedness and map your neighborhood and all kinds of stuff. So I'll end it there unless there's any questions. Yes.
Is like the liaison officer, so you have something that is cross boundaries because no incident's going to be like exactly within the borders of something. So would like Westland Police, that person would coordinate Tualatin Valley and Westland Police and county agencies?
Potentially. Yeah, absolutely.
So that you're not all tripping over each other and not being effective.
Right. Well, you can speak to this geographic spot, but let me give you a typical example of why we bring a liaison officer with us. So anytime you have an evacuation of homes, you have local sheriffs with the jurisdiction to do so. So we bring in a liaison officer that can communicate the team's needs and desires with the sheriff's needs. And they don't always line up. So it takes a lot of diplomacy for that liaison to coordinate between the team and the local jurisdiction. Because typically we're from out of area, we come into a new area, we need a person to help navigate
exactly
the political environment.
I
but
was wondering,
you can maybe speak to how it would work locally here.
Yeah, and I think that's where it's nice to have a system of this nature, right? Is we actually have an incident management team for Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. And so we actually, at a low level, would staff up something like this. And we've done this for exercises. And yeah, that liaison officer does become that connection between all of the agencies they're playing. So even if they're not in, if Westland Fire and Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue and let's say City of Westland Public Works are not in a unified command, that liaison officer would be the one to help make sure that at least we're all talking and connected. If we're focused on an incident, a large fire, for instance, we still have somebody that's going to interface with everybody else that's playing or affected by it. But yeah, it's a critical part, actually, in my experience.
We used to not bring them with, but now we almost always bring at least one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it would make such a difference in the response time and the effectiveness of the responders, in not just like getting kind of, I don't mean to be offensive, but squirrely.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like you've got, what about this? There's too much talking going on and not enough responding, and it just seems like it could be a kind of crazy, ineffective nightmare if somebody isn't coordinating this and they have to. Because you've got a protocol in place, they listen to whomever that person in charge is, not like, well, I'm in charge of my department. I don't care if you're in charge of your department.
Yeah.
That wastes time. So I was just trying to see, because that's a really key part of it in my mind, of making sure that, you know.
And that's why it's nice, because a lot of, especially around emergency response, has adopted ICS and understands it. So then everybody kind of fits in a lot smoother in understanding how to align and put together resources.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before, it was we talk one language, you talk another language, let's see if we can not speak gibberish. And that wasn't always successful. So by coming under a common language, like ICS, we can all expect the same thing. And then also when it comes to like resourcing, for instance, it's really nice because if there's a large fire that's spooling up and I'm asking for an engine, a fire engine, is going to be different for Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue than it is for Ashland Fire, than it is for Oregon Department of Forestry, or all these different agencies that fight fire. So again, it gives us an understanding to what exact resources we're talking about, so there isn't a miscommunication and, oh wait, that's not going to help me. I needed a different type of fire engine. And again, as you would expect as taxpayers, right, to see those efficiencies, ICS helps provide that.
Thank you.
So if I understand, the incident commander is someone who's gone through this credentialing process and is now prepared. I mean, they're not just waiting. They're doing other things until an incident happens.
Sure.
So is there a protocol for deciding which of these credentialed incident commanders are dispatched to this particular event? How is that determined?
So I actually just wrote a scenario based on the Northwest Portland gas explosion that happened in 2016.
Aha.
Right? So that first in engine is the incident commander.
The what now?
The first in fire engine. They were the incident commander of that incident. So until it got more complicated and it blew up, right? So when they first got there, it was just a gas leak. And then it eventually blew up.
So to use your example, that would be like if you brought your team. Right, Stefan?
Sorry.
So he was giving the example of the first to show up was the fire department itself. Then it gets a little bigger, but that would be like your incident command. So that person was a commander there first. Okay, continue. I'm just trying to follow the rest.
Yeah, so that incident commander did what we call establishing command.
Uh-huh.
And then as more fire trucks showed up, as more people showed up, they brought in the next level, which was a battalion chief, to be the incident commander. And then
same responding fire department.
Correct. Whoever has jurisdiction. Agency having jurisdiction.
Okay.
And then as it escalated and got into a 24-hour operation, because we're still searching for victims and looking for damage and all that, they brought in an assistant chief to come in of operations to be the incident commander, theoretically having higher level qualifications and experience to be able to fill that role. But it doesn't necessarily matter what your day job is on a wildfire. You have to be qualified to be the incident commander.
Right.
It's a whole separate credentialing process.
I mean, when
it gets
all
weird.
Because when you've got, you know, three folks that are equal in credentialing and response, how do you decide which one and who decides is going to be
the
commander for this one?
That's a great question, and I don't want to go too far down the trail here, but if we had a large wildland fire in southwest Clackamas County, the Fire Defense Board would call for a team to respond to that. And those teams are pre-listed. Yep, they would call the fire marshal's office, request a team, and then that team has a pre-standing organizational chart, just like that, with predetermined, pre-qualified people.
So these commanders are kind of predetermined.
Absolutely.
And come with this
entourage.
Yeah, gotcha.
And also, last year when I talked about some of the deployments I was on, right? That was happening once that local group, that local set of resources, fire department, law enforcement, et cetera, had exhausted their resources, right? They've said, this is bigger than we can handle with our department or even our mutual aid nearby department. So they're saying, we need to take it to another level. And that's where then we have these state teams that are predetermined that meet, practice, and get ready for these and handle them mostly through the summer to be deployed.
So there are teams with actual names on them that are
green, red, and blue.
The state has six of them. Forestry has three, and the fire marshals have three.
Gotcha. All right.
And then there's several interagency federal teams as well.
And something to remember with this is it's all hazards. So we talked a little bit about fire, a little bit about bombing, a little about all these different things that can happen. Flooding. The team to Rio Show was pulled up for a volcano in Hawaii. They were sent to Hurricane Michael in Florida. So it's really a structure, again, that also applies to everything. You can apply any of this irregardless of what the hazard or emergency is.
Or the event.
Yeah.
Could be anything.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's Super Bowl. I just wanted to thank Jeff. So usually fire and police, we pay a lot of money or make his time available because of his expertise that he teaches us. So I appreciate him being nearby and willing to come over and spend the night with us. But
I'm a former Westland resident, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Cool. We lived up at the Cascade Summit apartments. And just to advocate, I heard traffic. That intersection there is absolutely awful. There needs to be a light there.
That's why I was almost late today. It's like playing Frogger.
Oh, it was crazy.
Well, my daughter almost got hit there. It's bad. Yeah, it's terrible.
Any other questions regarding the incident command system?
This is impressive. I mean, this structure. It's the average citizen like me, you know, doesn't think about this kind of thing. And I've had several people ask me, Aftermath Your Neighborhood, well, and it's usually older guys that have been like in a corporate job type thing where they're used to, they want to know all the facts and have all the details.
They want to know how the sausage is made.
Yeah, and they all want to know, after I batten down the hatches and make sure everybody in my house is okay and take care of the neighbors and all that, when am I going to be able to contact the responders? And I said, you're not. It depends on the level of disaster. If it's something big, you're not. They're doing something else. Well, no, there's got to be a hierarchy. There's got to be a structure. You know, they insist on that. And I said, that's what they're doing. They have to triage the situation, and then they go and respond appropriately. And you can't assume that you're going to rise to the top because you're yelling the loudest. And then they all kind of look at me like, yes, I can. No, you can't. So that is the main thing. It's like, how are my people? Where can I get a list of, they ask me this, where can I get a list of the people in West Lynn that are in charge of everything? And it's like, really? You aren't listening.
Unfortunately, a little more complicated than that.
Yeah.
But by design. Yeah. A lot of it, I mean, it has a lot to do with money. Who's paying the bills, right?
Yeah.
Has to do with jurisdiction. So 12th Valley has response authority as well as West Lynn Police and State Police. Tell them let the experts do the work.
That's what we do. It's like they're highly trained for a reason. And please let them do the thing. And really, it's I can kind of understand it. It's like I'm trying to protect my family, and you know, I feel kind of helpless is what they're saying, and they don't really say that. So you do have to have the right. Well, Stefan's the diplomat. I mean, you're used to putting things in a terminology that everybody can understand. You're doing the very best you can, and there is a protocol in place for this very reason.
Yeah.
And we try to, I mean, we certainly don't try to do his job when we're doing Map Your Neighborhood. We just try to say, trust me, you've got to take care of yourself, because it'll be a while until people are out there helping you.
Also, as Jeff pointed out, that this structure is used for non-emergent scenarios, but it might be large in nature that require coordination between multiple entities and agencies. A Super Bowl or even, you know, Rose Festival would have some type of structure where multiple agencies or multiple departments in there are communicating under an overall commander. And if nothing else, that gives them an opportunity to train and experiment under perhaps a less stressful environment where they see, oh, we need to do this. We have this communication problem here. We need to make sure that isn't an issue should, you know, a real disaster happen. So in addition to the, you know, training that's training, they have some practical application occasions as well throughout, you know, the area. So it does play a multiple role in setting up structures for a number of events or incidents, as Jeff called
it. Have you guys gone down the CERT road yet?
Yeah, we've talked about that. I haven't personally had the training, and I probably should.
Well, it's really unfortunate FEMA stopped funding that program.
Yeah.
And it's I don't know. I thought it was really good. We had several CERT communities in Alaska, and we would actually, as from the state, would go teach them ICS and teach them how to integrate into their local community emergency response framework. And it was really fun But I don't know. It's a lot of energy it takes to put a CERT team together. But if you guys ever do want to need somebody to teach ICS, I'd be happy to help.
Okay.
I was going to say real quick, Judy, I think one thing that might help for some of those questions that you get is just to let them know that the reality is in a large incident like that, you're probably looking at, and we call them incident management teams. So all these people together, incident management team. They're probably coming from a regional, federal level. There's set teams not only at the state, but at the region and national level. So those are probably the people that are going to come in, and we don't know who that is right now. Right? It could be whatever team's up at that time. And they,
is a good thing.
Yeah.
I've tried to respond to my own community in this role. It's very challenging. It's very emotional.
Yeah.
And it takes time.
Yeah.
Because those resources could be very far flung.
Yeah,
absolutely. So.
Well, I'll leave these with you guys.
Thank
you. Okay.
If you want extras, I'll take one for myself. Critique there. I didn't spend a lot of time on this, so.
No, it's a great
It's a little busy.
It's a good graphic, though, because it's. I think it's clear.
Does anyone
just one more time on the three objectives? I just want to be sure.
Oh, the priorities, incident priorities.
The
yep.
Life safety. Stabilization.
Yep.
And then
physical property.
Property and environmental conservation.
Property, that was it.
Actually, the correct FEMA language is property and environment conservation. Or conservation of the environment. That's what it is.
Well, keep up the good work.
Thanks. I'm gonna split if you guys are cool with that.
Thanks.
Fine with
that. All right. Nice to meet you all.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah. Take care. Drive safe.
Were there ideas anyone's come up with for other topics that we might want to entertain?
When school is out, does this email still work, or are you?
You might get a I'm out of office reply, but I generally check them once a week.
You do. Okay. Oh, great. Just in case I have questions while I'm doing the record. Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye. Any other topics of interest that we want to delve into or give thought to, or have you not thought of anything? It's been a hectic week or month. I know it has. If not, we'll put that off for next time. Is there a brief update from TVFNR?
Sure, I'll make it brief. So first one is not right now, obviously it's a little wetter, but we are doing a lot more awareness around wildfire. You may have even seen we instituted a burn ban along with a lot of other fire departments in the area for a little while there, as we were seeing increased brush fires in the area just from a quick warm-up. Also, just be aware, the fire weather report for the first time in a long time is showing dryness and more concern about fuels on the west side of the Cascades than it is on the east side of the Cascades. So again, we've put together some flyers that I'll bring for the next meeting around just things that our community can do to be aware of that. And to, it really, again, it's kind of funny, it falls within Map My Neighborhood. It's kind of on the person and the homeowner. If you can make your home defensible, if you can mitigate the fuels that are around your home, it helps us to protect it. If you have lots of pine needles in the gutters and brush right up against the side, and you've stacked all your firewood against the side of your house, there's only so much we can do. So that piece is just as important as what we can bring for response. And again, I'll bring some stuff next meeting regarding that. We also did an exercise in which the system that you just learned about was put to the test. We do this once a year. It's called a PACE exercise, and the counties do it. They do it at the state level. This one was around what if there was a disease, in this case I think it was the plague, bubonic plague, that was used in a terrorist incident. How would we work to vaccinate emergency responders? How would we work to vaccinate communities? And it really focused around what's our points of distribution. The main thing that this test, and hopefully as a citizen, this makes you feel a little more better. You know, we had to work with how do we interact with our county partners? How do we interact with our cities? Because we're responsible for distributing medicines to them. How do we interact with police? It puts all these agencies in a scenario to work together and practice that. What's our protocols? What's our communications like? So that when the real thing happens, we've got some practice. So that was really good. Last two are our levy is up for vote. I shared that with you previously. That happens on tomorrow night. And then we are going under a transfer of command for our fire chief. So that comes up at the end of June is when our fire chief will conclude his term. I'm not sure if you call it exactly what we call it, but his service. And then our new fire chief will take over on July 1st. So just FYI.
Okay. From Captain Mahana, we've got the community service officer has been hired. It's a Westland native, Cole Bateman. He'll be starting on May 22nd and will be working with the retiring CSO as she leaves on July 1st.
The first name was Cole?
Cole, C-O-L-E.
Okay. And his title is the community?
Community service officer.
Service officer, okay.
And then currently there are two open positions for sergeant. They have five applicants, one internal, four from outside the department. They're doing sergeant interviews tomorrow. On Thursday, the chief will interview the potential candidates. They hope to have the positions filled by July 1st. And that's the extent of what he had forwarded to us. If I can get back to my agenda. Does our guest from Lake Oswego have a community comment? Or... Okay, I'm just, you know, give you the opportunity to join in any comments if you have any. Is there anything else that we need to address or discuss? Are you guys ready to go home?
Go Blazers?
No. Do or die tonight, I guess. Our next meeting should be the fourth Monday in June, June 24, if my calendar was correct. And... if there is nothing else, may I entertain a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Does anybody object? If not, let's have the ayes vote for it, and let's get out of here. We finished in under an hour.
Aye. Did we do the ayes?
If not, we did. Okay. Yeah, it took us 57 minutes.